You're listening to Control ClickCast. We inspect the web for you. Today, Anna Brown rejoins the show, this time to talk about using New Relic to diagnose performance. I'm your host, Leah Alcantara, and I'm joined by my fab co-host,
Emily Lewis.
This episode is brought to you by Ellis Lab. Expression Engine is the web professional's content management system of choice. It's great for designers, great for clients, and has an awesome community and ecosystem. Try the core version for free and see how Expression Engine can help you be an internet hero. Visit ellislab.com/expressionengine for all the details. Before we introduce our guests today, we want to remind our listeners that thanks to your nominations, Control Click is up for Podcast of the Year in this year's Net Awards. This is where we need those sound effects.
I know, seriously.
That we keep talking about, but we never put in.
We are so, so excited to be nominated for the third time because I feel like it means that even though we rebranded and shifted our focus a couple years ago, we're still doing something right for our listeners. So thank you, listeners.
Thank you so much. And please vote. We can't win without your vote. Voting is open until July, and we'll have the link on our show notes. But now, back to today's episode.
I'm actually really excited about this one, Leah, because this topic is actually one that's very close to all three of us, because Anna did some New Relic subcontracting work for one of our clients, which got you into New Relic and us into some real-world EE performance tweaking. And of course, it's great to have our good friend Anna Brown back on the show. Anna is a freelance front-end developer and designer and is an expert in both craft and expression engine development. Welcome back, Anna.
Thank you, ladies. So great to be here.
So Anna, can you tell our listeners a bit more about yourself?
Sure. Well, first, congratulations on Podcast of the Year nomination. That's awesome.
Yay.
Can we vote every day?
I think one person, one vote.
Darn it. Well, I'll rally everybody in Albuquerque. I'm a freelance web developer. I do front-end web development for ad agencies or just agencies. I've worked full-time doing this for about 10 years now, and I am in Albuquerque, not too far down the road from Emily.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I get to enjoy living vicariously through you as you explore Albuquerque on Facebook. You're doing tons of hikes around the state. It's amazing.
Right.
When did you get into this?
Well, programmers sit a lot, and I just got tired of sitting. And I'm not sure what propelled me to do this, but about 3 years ago, I started getting out after work, because I'm not a big morning person. But after work, I still have energy. So I started hiking. I joined a hiking group in Albuquerque, and now I lead hikes for the group, and I'm sort of just everywhere. But I love it. I love exploring. I mean, it's, you know, I work alone all day, and I'm an extrovert, so...
Right.
It's not a healthy place for me, really, mentally. So getting out, being with people, exploring, seeing new things, I just sort of can't get enough of it. So tomorrow, actually, I'm headed to the Grand Canyon for a five-day backpacking trip.
Ooh.
And we're doing, the trip is rim to rim to rim. So it'll be about 80 miles of hiking, which is, to me, I'm just ready for it. Like, bring it on.
That's incredible.
Yeah, it's awesome. I'm looking forward to it.
Impressive. Cool. Yeah,
I went to
the North Rim to do some camping, but we didn't do any major hiking. Well, it's the Grand Canyon. It's rather grand.
There's
a lot of space to hike around.
Isn't it amazing? I hiked it for the first time last September. I did a five-day trip that last year also. And, you know, we drove up, we got situated, and then we went and watched the sunset, and I really just was blown away. You don't see many things in your day-to-day life that are just so awe-inspiring, and the sunset happened to be amazing that day, and the clouds were phenomenal, and I had tears in my eyes a little bit.
I feel really lucky to live in this part of the country. I really do. It's pretty amazing. Even outside of Albuquerque, you know, 5 minutes outside of Albuquerque, there's stuff that's just beautiful.
Yeah. You know, and I grew up here, and I don't know that I really explored New Mexico until, you know, into my 30s. For a long time, felt that I needed to leave and go see the world, but there's just so much to see here. And it's beautiful. We have such a diverse landscape. And, like, I don't like to tell people because I don't want a lot of people coming to New Mexico. But
well, you should stop posting all those photos.
I know. Yeah. Well, no, I've just posted them to New Mexico people. No.
Well, you know, I'm curious, Anna, since you started doing this 3 years ago, getting out in the afternoons and getting involved, has your work improved, your productivity improved, or
no,
is it the same?
No, not at all. No, it's terrible. I'm working less, mostly because I just sort of, I don't know, programming is great, but I'm just enjoying some other things a little better. So I'm trying to take Fridays off more often. Also, you know, as you get older, your body just doesn't want to program as much. I mean, my hands don't want to do it as much, and my body from sitting all day just isn't so happy, so... Also, I own rental properties, and I've just, you know, I save, and then I buy one, and then I'm focusing a little more intention on that, just to diversify and just to do something different. I like real estate a lot, so it may be somewhere where I point my attention in the next couple of years.
Mm-hmm. That's good. I mean, almost all of our guests talk about, like, a hyper-focus on work. It's nice, you know, talking where that's not the hyper-focus and you're still really happy kind of person.
Yeah. Well, you know, I did that hyper-focus thing for a long time and I don't know, it got old. It wasn't fulfilling. How's that?
Sure.
Yeah, and there's always cycles, you know?
Yeah. I am much happier, honestly, just where I find ultimate happiness and I'm present is when I'm out hiking or climbing or just, you know, doing something outside. So why not do more of that?
Well, that makes sense.
I need to figure out how to get paid to do it.
Yeah, exactly. That's why you get.
I know.
That's true.
You know, I lead hikes. Maybe I should start
charging.
You know. Yeah, then you have to get the insurance.
Oh, dear.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
That'll be expensive. But right. Anyway, I just enjoy it as a pastime. And you know what, too? So Ryan Masuga, who is another developer in our community, posted a blog posting maybe last winter or something, or late winter, and he said, I'm getting in shape, and I've got this Fitbit, and I read that, and I was curious about it, and last April, I think April 1st, I started using one, and I think it's just made me more active, even. Mm. Well, because I compete with people. So I'm a little competitive, less against them and more against myself. And so, you know, getting my 10,000 steps is pretty important every day.
Well, it gives you a visual tracking, right?
Yeah.
And I was about to say that, you know, this would be a nice segue into our topic. Because,
data.
Yeah, it's data tracking. It's performance tracking, in fact.
Yep, absolutely. It's exactly that.
Exactly. And seeing, you know, where you could improve.
Yes.
So in regards to today's topic, let's just talk about what are performance issues? Like, what's the most common performance issues on sites?
Well, the ones I've seen, I mean, there's so many different components, actually, that can cause performance issues on a website. And there are ones, some that you can control and some that you can't. Ones I've seen in the past have been related to sort of problems in the code, just code that worked in a specific time with specific conditions and then the conditions changed, meaning maybe there's more traffic or the database was bigger or, you know, who knows, maybe the actual code changed. So it just depends on the conditions around the code. I've seen issues where an external connection was the problem. And, you know, maybe you're connecting to Twitter and Twitter is down, their API is down, or another API. So if you're doing some external connection, that isn't really under your control. I mean, what you can control is just removing the connection temporarily. I had that with a project, an e-commerce site, where we were connecting to Campaign Monitor during the checkout process, and everyone who actually completed a purchase, we were adding to our database, and their API was down for a day. I don't know if it was down. It was really, it was timing out, I think, is what was happening. And I didn't consider that when I added the code there. So the orders weren't completing because it was getting stuck on adding to the database. So I really just needed a timeout there that said, okay, well, if you can't complete this connection in 1 second or something, then just ignore it and go on to the next thing.
So when you're looking at, like, let's say a client comes to you and says, like, there's something wrong with my site, it's just like really slow, what are the first things you look out for? Because you mentioned that there's so many mm-hmm. particular factors. It could be external, it could be internal, it could be front end code, or it could be the CMS.
Yeah.
Where do you even begin?
Okay. Well, I would say you begin by just having experience. So you have to see a lot of things to recognize what they are. It's sort of such as it is in life also, right?
Right.
As you get older and you're wiser, you know more things. So having experience helps, but being able to duplicate it consistently also helps. The hardest thing to track down is something that just really doesn't happen consistently. But then mm-hmm. if it's not consistent, then asking the right questions to understand the pattern. So it's hard. I mean, you just have to identify sort of all the pieces around it, basically. And I think that helps you narrow into where it possibly could be.
Right.
And then your attention focuses there. Sometimes it's not always clear. And that's hard to me. Those are the hard projects. But I think programmers are, in general, problem solvers and puzzle solvers,
right?
Mystery solvers, you know. So we're all good at that with the right background.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, it's one of those things where I feel like when we first started talking about this particular client that we worked together on, you know, we just did the inspector stuff. Like, that was like mm-hmm. one of the most basic things. Like, what is the inspector showing? Like, are their assets even loading? You know, those kind of things. I would think that would be one of the first things I'd check. But the hard part about that is, even if this entire site is slowing down, is there one particular page that's bringing everything down mm-hmm. or several pages? Mm-hmm. That's where I feel like a tool like New Relic helps you isolate
yes.
it, because otherwise you're like, okay, we know the site is slow. There might be front-end assets and back-end assets, but I don't even know where to begin.
Yeah, exactly. And it can be just one page. It can be a page that's getting enormous amount of traffic.
Right.
You're not necessarily going to see that by inspecting.
So would New Relic be one of those things that if you have the ability to use the budget or whatever to start with, you think, after having gone through this particular experience?
Well, my background with New Relic started with a project where I had sort of regular problems and tried sort of everything else to stabilize
right.
the site and never could. So I'd tell people, if you're having problems, just get New Relic installed. They do it. You have to have certain server conditions where you actually have root access and
virtual private server.
Yeah, yeah, or a dedicated server. But you need root access and you need to be able to install this PHP module, basically, and restart Apache to get the data flowing. So, and they offer a 2-week trial with all the data. So for most projects, it's one or two simple things and you don't need the regular monitoring.
And there's a free tier too.
Yeah, they have a free tier.
Just doesn't save all the data, but if you just want to look at that day,
right,
you can do that.
Yeah, and it's a shorter, so the free window is just a shorter window. I think it's, you can see 1 week of data and then you just can't drill into the details, into the actual individual page load transactions. But it's definitely helpful.
So did you hear about New Relic, or were you researching when you were trying to come up with a way to stabilize that site you were dealing with?
Well, the site was hosted at Engine Hosting on dedicated servers. This was a big high traffic site. It was a daily newspaper. As the database grew and the traffic grew, it just had regular problems. And we were always putting out fires on the site, and we would fix something, and then a couple weeks later, something else would start acting up. And I felt I was always reactive. And the hardest part was that this is very early morning traffic, and so I am not a morning person. So, but I would get phone calls saying, hey, there's problems, and would be working on this, you know, at 6 in the morning. And that just wasn't good for me. The stress was a lot more than I like to handle. But this happened for quite a long time, and it just, because we would fix one thing and then something else would happen. So anyway, I was working with Nevin at Engine Hosting to keep the site stable. We were on very big servers. The database was on its own dedicated server, and we had, ultimately in the end, we had 2 web servers, and then we had a Varnish server for caching, and then this database server. And so we had a pretty meaty server environment in place. but it just still consistently was having issues. And, you know, when high traffic articles posted, that's when they would have the most issues, and we just couldn't stabilize it during those periods. And there are sort of two options there. You just keep throwing server power at it, or you fix the underlying problem. And I am a freelance developer. I do this by myself. I don't have people in my office to look at code with me and track down server problems. It's challenging because when you're the person responsible for it, you are the person responsible. The odd thing is that a lot of these size newspapers will have a department, a tech department focused on this stuff. And here was a project that when it was built, I was the freelancer for an agency in Miami. And then I stayed on with the newspaper and the agency went away. But I was the person who then they called when there were problems, and I was the maintenance person, and I was their tech department. So, and ultimately, I felt very responsible for this site, and I wasn't going to let them down. So, Nevin is the one that just maybe he heard about it or had started using it with other clients, and he said, look, let's get this set up and let's see what we see. So, we installed it on the server, and I think I spent, I collected data for a couple days, and then I probably spent 2 or 3 days just going through all the data. And anything that looked abnormal to me or that I didn't understand, I made note of it, and then I researched it. Research meant getting into the code, finding out why this query was running this many times, et cetera, et cetera. So there was just anything that was abnormal. And ultimately, that led me to making a number of changes. And I believe one of the changes was actually the fix. I mean, all of them fixed and contributed to better performance. But one change was the main one. I never would have been able to find it without a tool like this.
Well, what does New Relic tell you? What kind of data does it give you?
Sort of high-level overview. There's a dashboard. Let me just get in there. I'm actually looking at a dashboard now. The dashboard will give you... Well, the whole thing gives you aggregated statistics or data. It aggregates all the data coming into it, and it gives you pretty graphs and lists where issues bubble to the top, if that makes sense. It also will show you external service connections. In this case, it will show you, for the project I'm looking at specifically, it's on PHP with the MySQL database, so it's going to show you PHP transaction response times and database response times. And so just at a high level on this dashboard, we can see spikes or decreases and just sort of sustained levels for that. With the paid version, you get 3 months of data. And with the free version, I think you get a week. So then you can drill into... and they're transactions rather than pages necessarily, but most times they are pages. And the way Expression Engine actually has a sort of a built-in module that when and if you add New Relic to the server, Expression Engine will just kick in and start sending the correct data. And what it's sending is really data based on the segments of the URL. And then they start grouping themselves together based on the volume of data. So with a big page count website, you're not going to see individual pages per se, but like on an article page, that data will start to group itself together. So you'll see overall times for your article page, not a specific article. And you'll see database queries and times, and it'll start showing which database queries are taking the longest time. Let me actually just get in there and I can tell you. For database queries, it'll show you the most time-consuming ones, the slowest average response time, and then the highest throughputs. So that's pretty important. And then the slowest queries by a web transaction. So it gives you some decent data.
A way to narrow things down.
Yeah. What happens is that things bubble to the top. That's what I'm going to use as sort of the visual. And the queries that are the most time consuming will show from highest to lowest. And they're only going to show, I think, about 20 of them. So, but anything at that top should be researched. It may not specifically be a problem, but you want to understand why that specific query is the most time consuming.
You know, let's talk a little bit about the client you helped us with, Anna. Leah, you were the one who worked one-on-one with Anna. Can you first describe some of like the situation that happened? Because I think it was interesting because we didn't know what was happening until there were problems. And that's how we got involved. But they were changing some stuff with their server and then traffic problems.
Yeah. So the long story short is, because they made a bunch of server changes that we didn't know about, their site just literally would, you know, stop. Like it would not show up, either it would crash or just like time out, like nothing would load. And so it got to that critical point, like trying to figure out, well, what's wrong with this? And internally, they just kept looking at server logs, but that really is kind of gobbledygook, you know, unless you really know what you're looking at. But in addition, that doesn't really tell you that much except saying, okay, did it go down simply because there were, you know, a ton of visitors? But even if that's the case, historically with this particular client, they've always had this type of traffic before, but it never went down. So it got to that point where it's like nobody knew what was going on. And I actually heard Anna talk about New Relic a little bit. She showed me like basically, here's what it'll show you specifically, the slowest pages or the slowest situation. And then from there, you can do some work. And what's interesting is that I think within the first week that we installed New Relic, we found the main culprit of the speed situation.
I think the first day.
Yeah. Simply because
as soon as we looked at the data.
Yeah, exactly. Simply because the moment we started gathering the data, it was really obvious because as Anna was mentioning, information just starts bubbling up. And with this particular client, we were just speculating all this expression engine optimization stuff that was going on. And it actually wasn't expression engine. I mean, there were a lot of expression engine things that we did end up doing. But what we noticed was an inordinate amount of 404 errors. Like everything was 404ing, every page was 404ing, and it was showing
up.
But
not on the browser. Like you didn't see it when you were on the browser.
No, because here's the thing. Like not all 404s are page related. You can get a 404, a quote unquote silent 404, a background 404, if an asset like an image doesn't actually exist that actually pings the server with a 404 message. The problem was on top of all those 404s, every single page had a missing asset. So
it had three.
Yeah.
Well, that was the issue. To me, that was the primary issue.
Yeah, that was absolutely.
Every page load had three 404s on images. I think it was an icon file. I don't remember what they were, but they were coming out of the CSS. Maybe just for a modal window or something. I can't remember what it was.
Yeah, it was like an abandoned script that wasn't being used. Because, I mean, this is one of the things about like older sites, right?
Or inherited sites.
Yeah, too many people have worked on them and nobody has all of it in their head anymore.
Yeah, exactly. Or you just leave certain things as they are because you don't know what it's being used.
What is it going to break if you remove it?
Yeah, exactly. So you don't remove it. But that was actually a mistake because with this particular site, it was trying to ping all the missing images. Now, that in itself shouldn't bring a site down, even though it does affect every single page because those assets were missing for every single page. Mm-hmm. The real issue we also found digging deeper was that for whatever reason, and we figured out it was two things, a typo in htaccess and the order it was written in, the rewrite in the htaccess, but the 404 signals for those missing image assets were pinging Expression Engine each time.
Yeah. It was hitting the 404 page that was in Expression Engine, right?
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
Or was it loading? It might have. No, it had to be.
No, I don't think it loaded it because it would crash.
Well, no, it was loading it. But when there was just too much traffic for every page load.
Right.
So it was loading its normal page. Expression Engine was loading the page that was requested. But then also for every single page load, it was hitting the 404 page three times.
Right.
And that 404 page is running through Expression Engine. And also had resource intensive queries in it.
Yes.
So ultimately the 404 page needed to be dumbed down and those image 404s needed to stop running through Expression Engine.
Yeah. So the fix obviously was fix the 404 image paths completely first.
Right. Remove them.
Yeah. Remove them so that there's no longer a 404 thing. Next, make sure that the htaccess wasn't pinging Expression Engine simply because it was a missing CSS or missing image file.
Let me explain that real quick. Because Expression Engine's code for removing index.php from the URL sort of, I guess it sends all requests through Expression Engine. So there's this HT access code that's doing this removal. Well, it looks at everything and sends it through Expression Engine to understand what to do with it. And so if you don't tell the server to explicitly not send images and JavaScript and CSS and icon files and any, you know, anything else, don't explicitly tell it to not go through Expression Engine, then it will. So
yeah, absolutely.
Is that good? Like, do you want it to do that, or should by default you say don't, even though that's not part of, like, I guess the recommended code snippet they give you?
I think it's in there now.
Is it?
No, you definitely do not want it to go through Expression Engine. Period. I mean, your images are
not... It's not a page.
You should never have an image running through Expression Engine. The real image won't go. I mean, if an image exists, it won't run a page load on Expression Engine. But if there's a 404, it will.
That was, like, essentially, like, we found the main issue almost immediately, simply because now we actually got the data, got the first thing to even look at, because without something like New Relic, we wouldn't even know where to start. And that's exactly where we were. We didn't know where to start.
So what I saw when I looked at the specifically what's called the transaction data in New Relic,
right,
I was seeing these image files and
bubbling up, yeah.
Yeah, bubbling up in there. And those should not be there at all, ever. So when they are showing there, that means they are, those server requests are running through Expression Engine. That's what it says to me. And I saw those on my project also, on my newspaper project. So there's the whys part, where I have seen that before. I've actually seen it on a number of other projects since.
Right.
And so I knew right away, one, it shouldn't be there, and two,
right,
I knew what the fix was. And I just had you remove it because it shouldn't be there. So why?
Yeah.
Like, it shouldn't be there. Let's fix it.
No, totally. And I mean, it just also points out that just generally, whether you're using Expression Engine or another CMS, like, thinking about, does this even need to be dynamic? Because mm-hmm. you were like, mm-hmm. why don't you just make the 404 page a completely static page?
Right.
Like, how many times is the 404 message going to change? You know, all those kind of things, right?
Right.
Even let's say there is a mistake and a 404 situation was happening, if it's loading a static page versus, you know, a dynamically created one, it's still a better situation.
Oh, absolutely. It's not using PHP resources on the server, and it absolutely is not touching the database at all.
Yeah.
A lot of times the database resources can be sort of the core of the problem.
Well, and is there anything specific to Expression Engine that you need to keep in mind with New Relic? Like, you knew, like you said, you had experience with those assets showing up that shouldn't have, but that has nothing to do with Expression Engine. That's just something you had seen before. But is there anything with Expression Engine that's important to note if you're going to use New Relic?
You know, offhand, I don't have any input there. I don't
use the latest EE.
Yeah, definitely. I mean,
that's what we found.
You want to be on the latest EE and the latest add-ons if you can, but you can't always.
Oh, so absolutely.
The reality is you can't always upgrade.
Because you had to hack our EE install because we were in an older version.
Right. And the hack was just integrating a bit of code that said, if the New Relic module is installed, then send this data. And what I told it to do was to grab the URL segments so that I had that kind of data. And that stuff would start grouping.
Yeah, because before you did that, it just grouped it into this one giant EE/index file,
right,
or path,
grouping,
which it's still doing simply because I think that the older version of EE just doesn't send the right information.
I don't know. Okay, so after your project, that is the one thing I was not able to figure out, was why so many of the server requests were still logging under that. With more time, we could track it down. But I don't know. Some of that is your nightly backup. I mean, I can see
those ones. Yeah,
the ones that are. Yeah,
yeah,
so those are taking, you know, like 200 seconds to run. It's a big change. But there are some other ones that are maybe 9 seconds that are grouping there. I don't know what those are. It's just not a big enough problem, I think, on your server to spend a lot of time there.
I think that also brings up a good point, time and money. Because I'll be honest, I think that if the client hadn't gone down to what was, I guess, the smaller server, then we wouldn't have seen this happen, because when they had more server support, these 404s didn't cause a crash. It didn't mean that they weren't a problem, but we just didn't see them. So if they hadn't moved to this smaller server and then their site crashed, this wouldn't have become a priority for them. And it's become a priority. They're limited budget, but they're putting money towards improving the performance of the site, starting with identifying the issues, not just from the expression engine and database processing and things like that, but also front-end performance. But not all clients have that kind of budget. And Anna, you were talking about like when you were troubleshooting the newspaper site, were you like on a retainer? Did you charge hourly? Was there some sort of guarantee you had promised things would work so you had to eat it?
No, not at all. No, I bill hourly for any maintenance I do. I have in my career very rarely ever eaten any work. I mean, sometimes I maybe would on that project just because the amount of time spent trying to troubleshoot was quite a bit. But I mean, I always build. Just because you build it and it doesn't work doesn't mean you don't get paid. I mean, you don't have control over all the pieces, you know?
Did you have to talk with them about limits beforehand? Like, you know, because if you didn't know what was wrong, you could go down a rabbit hole.
Right, but this project, no, because it had to work. So they had a budget to support it. So it just had to work. So whatever it took, really.
Yeah, I think from our perspective, it's not a whatever it takes. They just don't have that kind of budget. But
that's a different size project, ultimately, also.
And absolutely.
New Relic is great for small stuff. I mean, it does the job. But it's this tool is built for websites and then applications, just any web apps that they always have to be on, you know. And you always, like, let's see, Airbnb. Airbnb, I think, is one of their clients. And Airbnb, those guys have a whole DevOps center that just focuses on making sure that website is fast and when they deploy code that it works. And they're always looking at this data because if they deploy code and there is a problem, they will spot it immediately here. And then they'll be able to drill down and see what the issue is and apply fixes and deploy new code. But they'll be able to see it. And so when something is that mission critical, then you have to have this kind of monitoring, not just New Relic, but there are other services. But you have to be able to see deep into the data. It's not optional for certain kind of websites.
And I think for where, I guess, is optional, like with this client that we're working with, Leia, it's become a priority for them, which is great for us because we don't have to sell them on anything. You know, we're just trying to work with them to prioritize what we find and work with them to say, well, we can fix this within this year's budget, and then these other things can be prioritized at a different place. But I think the biggest lesson that I've gotten from this client, at least from the business perspective, the budget perspective, is that when you're talking about performance, I think it's great when IT gets involved. Like this project, up until this problem arose, we were mostly dealing with marketing. Marketing was in charge of the website. They were the ones giving us content and dictating changes and things like that. But when the performance started affecting the site uptime, IT got involved. And I think that sort of escalated their interest in making this a priority, and which was something like I'm not sure if we would have been able to convey the importance to the marketing department the same way we could to IT, who could then internally do the educating.
You know, a lot of companies don't treat their websites the same as they would a storefront. And I think really companies need to do that a little better. When you have a storefront and your door doesn't open, there's a right. problem, right? And you fix it. You call whoever you need to get the dang door open. It's just not optional. And so, you know, if, I don't know, you know, the analogy is just that, like, people need to be able to get in and do what they need to do. And that process needs to be fast and easy. And the server backend part has to work.
So, Leia, since we finished up some of that initial troubleshooting with Anna, you've been doing some ongoing New Relic monitoring and reporting and tweaking things here and there with EE, while I've been doing some front-end performance monitoring. And what are some of the common things that you've fixed on some of the problem pages that you found on the site?
Well, before we get into that, I just want to mention another thing that solved a lot of issues before I did like just the general maintenance of speed stuff. Mm-hmm. Structure, the structure add-on.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So before I go into that, New Relic has something called transaction traces. So we've been talking about transactions. There's something where you could dive even deeper and it's called a transaction trace. But in order to get the transaction trace in the first place, you need to set something called the AppDex score to a specific aggressive level so that if your site or your pages don't meet that minimum level, it's gonna create a transaction trace to say like, okay, this took more time than you set in your AppDex score. So here's the trace at that point in time where it failed that test and exactly what time and what happened. You know, after we fixed that 404 issue, this was the next big issue, and it was showing up in practically almost all the pages. And the reason why is because their site is on Structure. So all the pages were developed through Structure. And it was actually one simple checkbox. So the issue was we were removing trailing slashes via htaccess, you know, to have clean URLs and to, you know, make sure that there's a consistency in URLs for SEO. However, in our structure module, it had add trailing slashes mm-hmm. to page URLs turned on. Simply by unselecting this, dropped, you know...
Right, the PHP resource usage.
Exactly. It was using up so much resources. And the moment we turned that off, it dramatically changed.
Now, I have to say that we could see something happening in that transaction trace. We could see a problem, clearly. But I don't remember what... It didn't point us exactly where we needed to go. It said something's a little more generic. And so it was something I hadn't seen before. So I was sort of trying to track that down. But I think you and I were screen sharing, looking at the structure settings, and you're right. Like, wait, what is
yeah.
that? And
yeah.
you knew
yeah, exactly.
the I would have not known to change that because I didn't know the details of your project. I didn't know you
yeah.
were doing that in your htaccess.
Yeah.
So just you having all the details in your head, knowing and reading that and saying, hey, wait a minute, right? Are we doing this here? And then we're undoing it. And
yeah, exactly.
That actually, it was a huge change, like an enormous change.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was one of those things that something like New Relic did help us, because when we did do the drill down to the transaction trace, maybe it doesn't tell you specifically it was that specific switch, but it told me it was structure.
Right, right. It said structure. And then what we were able to see, which is what New Relic is great for also, is that after we made the change, we could see
immediately
yeah. in that overview dashboard that there was a significant decrease of the
yeah.
PHP resource. And it's yeah. refreshing the data, I think, every minute is on that dashboard. And so, you know, you make a change, you wait a couple minutes, you're going to see it there.
Yeah, so that was one of the things that we did in the previous one that helped a lot. But for like day-to-day little things, and Anna actually gave me some of these tips when for this particular client, they've just contracted us to do quick fixes. I mean, there's still like big fixes that we need to do, but there's certain things that could help speed up, you know, specific templates immediately. And one of them was if a template contains a single entry, don't make it dynamic, explicitly state the entry ID.
Mm-hmm.
And that will reduce all the extra queries because
it stops one query, a big query, from running.
Yeah.
So it's best to target that directly.
Yeah, absolutely. And so it's like that was one of the very quick things where I just went through the most, not all the templates, but definitely the most popular templates. And I started isolating which ones had single entry issues. And then I just mentioned, okay, here's the entry ID, dynamic, no, you know, those kind of things. So that was one of the quick things that I was doing. The other things that I've been doing recently that is still like TBD because it's still currently, you know, we're still working on it, and whether it's working or not, sometimes you need to take some time to reflect, but I'm trying to reduce queries just overall. And the way that I started doing that is using the add-on stash. So I know some of the EE people must have seen me tweet, like, how do I reduce the, like, how many category entries need to be output, right? And that was like one of my questions. And Anna actually helped me out with this one too.
Oh, yeah. See?
Yeah.
Oh, is that the one where you had to do the category archive?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and that with, when you have to do that structure with custom fields in Expression Engine,
right,
you get into this thing where you have to do looping using the native code.
Yeah.
And that's just, it is so resource intensive. So using stash is, I think it's the only option, really.
Yeah, especially because something like stash means you could, with this particular client, for example, this category entries query was on every page.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my.
Yeah, because it was in the footer. It's like the massive footer links.
Yeah, got it. Yeah.
Yeah. So it was on every page. And then on top of that, other pages had in the main content area. So before, it was doing the queries for every page and it wasn't cached. And then on top of that, on the page where it has those queries again in the content.
It was doing it twice.
Exactly. So it was doing it twice. So basically what I'm doing right now is just trying to see like, okay, how do I, does it make sense to cache this? Does it make sense to add stash so that I can run the query once, but show the results of that query in two places?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's exactly what's perfect with stash. Like, I mean, I've got my own opinions over whether you should use stash for layouts, but stash for like making sure one query can be repeated in several places.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's perfect.
That's what I use it for. I use it when I need to push all the data into a container and then pull it out in some different ways. And I just used it on a project where I needed data in columns instead of rows. So I pushed all the data into one container and then I pulled it out. Like I built the table structure and then pulled out the data pieces and inserted them as I needed to. And it worked perfect. It was great.
And I mean, but there's always caveats to that too. The thing is, like, unless you buy, say, the mustache add-on, if you need to clear those stash caches, you really can't. Like, you have to go into the database and that's going to get messy, you know, those kind of things.
I haven't used the cache in stash. I just use stash. And I mean, is it creating cache without you telling it to?
Yeah. So there's certain things where you can cache it. Like I don't have it turned on. I just have it for like to do the one query and just repeat the output of that query in a few places. But there was this one particular page that's super, super busy and popular on this particular client site. And one of the things I know, for example, Matrix, if you got player or Matrix in any of these entries fields, that's going to slow things down. So I was thinking like, okay, maybe I should cache just this entire thing. The issue was we ended up deciding not to cache it because with their different admins and the ability to like, they want to be able to see the change within 5 minutes. So then it's like, well, you know, it'll change in 60 minutes or whatever. They were like, no, it would make more sense to for them to be able to see it live. You know, so like there's those types of things that you have to kind of consider. But, you know, there's always like unexpected issues too. So before this podcast, you were mentioning like, oh, I kind of took a peek and some of your performance of the PHP stuff kind of increased. The increase was because I turned on the stash for the categories. That was what changed during that time. But when you look at the database, it's dropped dramatically, like in terms of
the
like,
resource usage.
Yeah, the resource usage, because what I'm doing with this particular client is I do like one weekly report. So I just take a screenshot of what did happen before. So the database like usage is way down, but there's a tiny bit of an uptick with the PHP. And I'm just still trying to figure out, well, is one better than the other? Is the end user going to actually notice? Because, you know, sometimes some people, whenever you read about New Relic or like detractors of New Relic or whatever, are you going to be a slave to the data? Or is there more things that are going on here that actually affect the end user experience? So
I think the data tells you.
Yeah,
though.
No, that's true.
So I don't know why anybody would not want to look at the data first. The data tells you what's going on, at least, and what this is tracking. Well, one of the options for New Relic is for you to track the very first sort of kilobit to the very last of the page load for the user. So that's where you can start actually seeing the end user's experience also. And that's what's happening on the front end, so you can track that in a little more detail.
Well, and sometimes you can't make assumptions over, like, some people, for example, with this particular client, we're like, yeah, let's put on Cloudflare because it's a CDN and everyone recommends everybody to be on Cloudflare because it's free.
Yeah.
We did this with this client, and almost within the first 10 minutes, we both saw performance went up, and we're like this
triple.
Is what, yeah.
You know, you and I never understood why.
Yeah.
I still don't know why that happened. It doesn't make any sense.
Okay, so we've been talking about the specifics of some stuff you've done with EE, but does this mean that once you involve a CMS into a site, the things that could be causing performance hits kind of like doubles or triples versus something that's just, you know, old school?
Yeah, absolutely. I would say the answer is yes. And, you know, honestly, I haven't built a flat site maybe ever. I mean, I couldn't tell you the last one I've built, so it's probably been 8 or 9, 10 years. So everything I have built has been with a CMS. And once you add CMS, you're adding a database in PHP or whatever language you're starting to use. So you add these additional components that are beyond just the server configuration and the server performance. So
does that mean it becomes something that when you're looking at different CMSs that there should be a consideration of how the CMS itself performs? Is that something that I don't even know if I've seen Ellis Lab talk anything about how Expression Engine performs, like if you don't have Stash and you don't have caching enabled? And
I don't know that I've ever seen that. I did see that at the Craft Summit, that data was shown, and Craft performed exceptionally well in the tests.
Would that influence your decision to use a given CMS?
Well, I mean, yes. Obviously, if it's not performing well, it's not performing well for my clients. So I don't know that I've ever picked that way. So I would say no. I mean, if a CMS is going to have issues, they are going to get remedied quickly. So, I mean, we report that kind of stuff. I mean, EE at its core has the issues that I've experienced in 10 years with Expression Engine have generally been resolved quickly. I mean, they have to be identified first, and then Ellis Labs fixes them.
Like, you don't know what you don't know until it happens.
Yeah. You don't know what you don't know. And then there's conditions, like, you know, this newspaper site, we're at 1 million+ articles. You know, once you get to that kind of level, sometimes, I mean, nobody's really put that much data into the Expression Engine database, and then we don't know what's going to happen. So, and then you throw high traffic at that on top of it. You just don't know. I just recently had an issue on that site with the tags module, because the tags database is so enormous, you know, and at this point we have to take it out of the template because the query just doesn't function well at that kind of traffic table size level. It's too much, and it would have to be rewritten, and it's just easier for us to remove it.
And I think what this points out is that different conditions change the way you would develop, because when you develop just like a regular medium traffic or low traffic site, there's a lot of things you don't need to do that you have to do in a larger traffic site. Or there's a lot more, like, for example, you mentioned that this particular client of yours has Varnish or whatever. And for most traffic sites, that's like overkill.
Absolutely. This is the only project I've ever had to put it on. And we were putting it on to try to fix the other issues. So at this point, it's there. It may not be needed, but it's there. And it all works, so we don't try to fix. We don't try to change things. It works.
All right, so I want to ask, how, if you didn't have New Relic or a service like that, what would you do? Where would you start, Anna?
Oh, my God.
Like, what were you doing with that newspaper site before you got into New Relic? What were some of the things you were doing?
Sort of everything and anything. And I never felt like I had a good tool. So just simple things like making template changes and then sitting there and waiting.
Oh, God, you
know? Yeah. Is the server going to crash?
Right.
I mean, you don't know. Like, you can go through the database logs, the server logs. With MySQL, you get statistics based on the kind of traffic that's going through the server. And so I was looking at optimizing the database settings, going through server logs. I don't know. I don't find them. I don't find that I can find data through server logs. There are some tools that will process the server logs and give you some data. I don't recall if that was exceptionally helpful. I don't think it was. So with a lot of my troubleshooting, it was template-specific stuff. And then we were doing we were increasing server capacity. And then we also changed the database to, we converted it to an InnoDB, which changes, it allows the priority, I think, of writes over reads. I think that's what it is. Don't quote me on that. But something about InnoDB was a better option for this site because we, maybe it's reads over writes, because we needed the reads to happen fast and the writes could be a little delayed. You know, those could start piling up. Anyway, so we were trying everything and anything. So there are, for Expression Engine, there are tools. There are sort of native debugging tools that will give you template timing. And then there's another one that will actually show you database queries and timing. And then there are plugins for Expression Engine that do something very similar. There's a good free one out there that visually gives you good data. I still feel like New Relic is superior, but just because when I have used it, it has solved problems for me. And I did a talk at the Expression Engine conference last year, and I put a call out for people with problem sites, and I got a number of projects to use for my talk. So for each project, we installed New Relic on the server, collected data, and then I worked with the developer to first I identified issues, and then I worked with the developer to fix them. And so I was able to show across those projects pretty quickly how I was able to identify the source of the issue and then what our fix was.
Have you ever done anything with they're like free websites out there that you can run your site through, and it's more of a front-end performance report that it gives you, like Google's PageSpeed for one. Have you ever used any of those?
Yeah, I've used probably Google's PageSpeed a little bit, but I use Yahoo's YSlow one. It's good. It definitely helps. I had a project where performance was more important to the client than I understood. I do my job, but I don't focus an enormous amount of attention on optimizing performance because that's just really not there in the budgets. And as Leah said, it's not generally needed on most projects. But when it is important, then I'll spend time on that and focus on it. So I used YSlow and just got all the, any of the things that I identified, I was pretty quickly able to fix. So,
well, I think that we've been talking about this a lot. I think performance is, this is a total tip of the iceberg kind of conversation.
Oh, it is. I love looking at this data. So if anyone has a project, I know it's crazy, but I really enjoy this. So if anybody has a problem project and they can get New Relic installed on the server, please find me. I will help. I'll help do a cursory look for free, but then if you need help, I'm happy to drill in deeper. But it's great for solving problems.
I would agree. I enjoy it too, especially because there's that weird satisfaction of, you know, you said before New Relic, all you do is you'd make a template change and then you're like crossing your fingers and you don't know whether anything really happened unless the site crashed.
Yeah.
But for example, when we did make a fix,
we could see it
within the 5 minutes. It's just like, woohoo, the graph is changing.
I mean, when we narrowed in on that Cloudflare being the problem for the PHP performance,
right,
I never would have guessed it was that.
Right.
But we thought back, or I think we went back to emails and say, okay, what did we change that day? And we undid all the things that we changed, and that was one of the last things. And as soon as we disconnected Cloudflare, probably 50 to 100% decrease in PHP resource usage. That it was quite significant.
Before I let you go, Anna, you mentioned once that you've heard of other services other than New Relic. Is that, did I hear you right?
Well, I pulled up a list of a number of them. There are a lot of tools like this. If you just Google application monitoring, that's sort of the general group that they fit under. Here are a couple. Flightrecorder.co, appnet.com, and they have a tool called TraceView, serverdensity.com, ruxit.com, and appdynamics.com. So those are some other services that do similar data collection and aggregation and then display all of that in usable graphs. And most likely all of them allow that drilling into an actual individual transaction also.
And I will say, as a business owner who has to ensure that the clients feel that they're getting the accurate information, but without having it be too much, I feel like the graphs and things that New Relic provides, like they're easy to extract out, put into a report, share it with the client. They have a sense of what's going on, but it's not the whole telling them to log into New Relic and see how things are better.
Right. Oh, they would get overwhelmed.
Yeah, absolutely.
But they can understand a graph that goes up or down.
Yeah.
Right. And that's actually a valuable thing for a tool to have, is to have that sort of pretty charts. It actually makes a difference for a client who doesn't, this is not their area of expertise. They just want to know that things are improving. Numbers are better. Graphs are prettier.
Yeah. So New Relic allows you to track the app, which is basically the PHP and MySQL components, and then the external connections. But it also lets you track browser-specific stuff and then also server-specific stuff. So you can, if you look at that server area, you can look at the disk space that's being used, the load average, CPU usage, memory usage. You can look at your network in and out, and then also your disk in and out. So those are all big things to keep an eye on also. Like, for instance, if you see big swings in your disk in and out, usually that's something getting written or deleted from the server. So with the tool like Expression Engine, it's most likely cache. So if I saw that, that's where I would look first.
Very cool. Well, this was a ton of information, and even though it's just the tip of the iceberg, hopefully this will help our listeners get a sense of where to even begin if you've got a slow site.
Well, the good thing is you're not alone with this. You're not blind. So if you have a problem server, you have 2 weeks of a free trial, get in and install on a server and check out what you have, because
especially if it's something that you've inherited, or you were just one part of a big team and now you're in charge, like Anna, you were describing, you know, it's one of those things where you don't know what's in place, or, you know, maybe things weren't done the way you would do them now versus how you've done them in the past. And it's one of those things that you just really have no control over when you inherit something. But this gives you a sense of finding out where the issues are.
Absolutely. You will not feel blind. And then you don't have the web host. You know, the web host always says, oh, it's the code.
Yeah.
And then you're like, totally. Wait a minute. Help me. The server's crashing. And they're like, oh, it's your code. Well, you can't see into the code. You can't see the problem.
So. That's exactly what...
They did that, right? No, it's the most infuriating thing.
They're like, how do you know it's the code? Did you run some report?
They do know. And so we don't know how they know. But they look at specific things. They look at their own kind of data like this, and they know, okay, it's not the code, or it's not the server.
All right. So before we finish up, we've got our rapid fire 10 questions so our listeners can get to know you a bit better.
Okay.
Are you ready?
Yeah, let's do this.
Okay. First question. Android or iOS?
iOS.
If you were stranded on a desert island and can only bring three things, what would you bring?
I would bring my dog, water, and food.
Very, very practical.
That's me.
What's your favorite TV show?
You know, I have dumped TV for a while, so I don't even know what's out there anymore. I really liked Breaking Bad just because it was awesome and just such different TV, and then it was filmed in Albuquerque, so can't get better than that.
What's your favorite dessert?
Any of them. I have a little dessert addiction right now. My pants are a little tight.
What profession other than your own would you like to attempt?
I would go into like rafting guide or some kind of guide.
Cool. Right.
Or I like problem solving. So like detective or police officer or forensics or real estate. Those are the three things that interest me. Yeah, they're very different, but...
What profession would you not like to try?
You guys asked me this last time. I absolutely would not be the guy who cleans septic systems.
I'm
just like, absolutely never.
I think you're consistent. I think that's what you asked last time.
I did. I answered that. Well, and I just had a septic system installed at a property, and it's the most disgusting smell. I can't... Yeah, anyway.
What's the latest article or blog post you've read?
Oh, I don't know. Let's see. I mean, I read stuff on Twitter all the time. This morning, yeah, blog post article. Oh, I read about a police officer who was just shot and killed last night in Rio Rancho, which is 5 minutes from my house. And it's the first police officer who's been shot and killed in the line of duty since this police department was started. And it's very disturbing.
If you could have a superpower, what would it be?
I would like to be able to make people happy.
Aww.
There's a lot of unhappiness in this world. And God, we just all deserve to be happy.
What music do you like to work to?
I sort of like, I can get into techno, you know, stuff that doesn't have a lot of voice and just more rhythm and consistent mind-numbing rhythm, I guess. And then I like really loud, like 90s.
Nice.
90s alternative, but I turn on really loud, you know.
Fun.
I work alone, so I can do that.
All right, last question, cats or dogs?
I like both a lot, but I don't like the cat hair. And I have a Maltese dogs, I guess, and Maltese don't shed, so life's good.
Awesome. Well, that's all the time we have for today. Thanks for joining us, Anna.
Thank you, guys. I always have so much fun. I really, you should have me on every month, and then, or I'll guest host anytime.
We'll have Anna's corner.
Yeah. It's always enjoyable. I love it. Thanks for having me on. Happy to come on again if you guys need me to chat about something.
In case our listeners want to follow up with you, where can they find you online?
Sure. So I'm on Twitter at Meteor Girl, or you can find me on my website, which is so dated, but meteorgirl.com. Just find me on Twitter.
Thanks again, Anna.
Thanks, guys.
We'd now like to thank our sponsors for this podcast, Ellis Lab and Pixel & Tonic.
And thanks to our partners, Arcus Tech, Devotee, and EE Insider.
We also want to thank our listeners for tuning in. If you want to know more about Control Click, make sure you follow us on Twitter at Control Click Cast, or visit our website, controlclickcast.com. And if you liked this episode, please give us a review on Stitcher or iTunes or both.
Don't forget to tune into our next episode when we'll talk about content first design with Steph Hay. Please be sure to check out our schedule on our site, controlclickcast.com/schedule, for more upcoming topics.
This is Leah Alcantara
and Emily Lewis
signing off for Control Click Cast. See you next time.
Cheers.